Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
The Athletic.
All right, Reds, Tony Evans here with Walk On, your Liverpool podcast from The Athletic. Well, the curtain comes down in a fitting manner to end a season of woe. We'll talk about the draw on the South Coast, what comes in the summer, and review our best and worst moments of the past 10 months with James Pearce, Kiefer O'Neill and Andy Jones. But let's start with your three words. Over in the Walk On podcast Facebook group, they had this to say. Jonathan Rapley, Ian Duncan and Arwell Luke and various other people have variations of glad it's over. Jane Stacey, longest season ever. Roy Crosby, let's start again. And John Seldon, Everton teased us. Kiefer, a final three words of the season.
It's all over.
Oh, another it's all over. Andy.
Gotta go with it. We're just happy. It's over. It's done.
I think mine would be moving swiftly on because I don't want to think about this season again for a long time.
James.
I'll go for just learn lessons. I think definitely glad it's all over, but unless lessons are learned, we could be sat here in 12 months talking about something equally as underwhelming.
I'm going to go for I hate summer. It's as simple as that. Bring back football.
To join our community of listeners on Facebook, just search Walk On Podcast and join the group.
You're just glad it's over now?
Yeah, very, very. Absolutely.
Jürgen agreed, glad it's over, at the press conference. What did you make of that?
it was the kind of final day game, doesn't it, that we've seen happen previously, where both teams making a lot of changes, both teams having nothing effectively riding on it, that it was just chaotic, wasn't it? And seemed fitting in a way, really, that the season should end in that manner, really, scrambling to salvage a point against a team preparing for life in the Championship. And we probably didn't learn anything new, I don't think, in terms of we all know some major surgeries required to that squad this summer. There's been those defensive frailties and big gaping holes in midfield that Liverpool really struggled with for probably the first two thirds of the season. You know, they were back with a vengeance at St Mary's on Sunday. The lack of tackles, the Soleimani goal, where he was able to run from inside his own half and no one got anywhere near him, was a throwback to kind of those dark days of January, February and March. But also a reminder that for all those issues, Liverpool do boast some serious firepower. And when you see, you know, Jota emphatically stick away his second goal in the manner he did, it just makes you think, you know, if only he had been fit for most of the season, if only Diaz was the same, things may have been different.
Yeah, Kiefer, 2-0 up and then Southampton, went all Real Madrid on us. I mean, could you believe some of the defending?
It was the last hurrah, wasn't it, with absolutely zero riding on this game for either team. So I think it was kind of the game or result you could have expected in a weird way. And I think the season has built us up this, like, you know, we're like shock resistant now, aren't we? Our shoulders are, you know, pretty tough because things have happened that we've just not expected and now come to expect. And I think yesterday, you know, when I checked and Liverpool were 2-0 up, and then I think the next time I checked it was 4-2, and I was just like, hang on a minute, what's going on there? But then also like, oh yeah, it's Liverpool this season. And I think, yeah, just one of them, wasn't it? Gomez, Matip, Kelleher, all probably rusty coming in. And it just, yeah, maybe not quite the last performance that they really wanted to put in. Because had Liverpool been fighting for top four, I'm pretty sure they would have won that game 4 or 5 nil.
Yeah, yeah. Andy, do you think anyone, well, you know, so the non-regulars, you know, took their opportunity there? I mean, it might be harsh to talk about Kelleher needing to do better, but, you know, let's face it, he should have stopped two of them, shouldn't he?
Yeah, I think when you look at that back four who came in, because there was a significant change to the back line, wasn't there? I think it's fair to say that, if anything, it sort of reaffirmed that Liverpool do definitely need to be looking at improving the defensive options coming into, you know, into next season. You're right, it's difficult to sort of criticise them because, you know, when was the last time Kelleher played? When was the last time Gomez played or started? Mata, I think, was West Ham. So, you know, they haven't played a lot of football, and then asking them to sort of come in out of the cold, really, and then suddenly just in a system that, you know, those three haven't played in, those growing pains are probably going to be like Liverpool's were again in the first half against Arsenal, for example, for everyone else who's been involved in that. So I don't think you can take much from that, and certainly none of them sort of put the foot forward as I should be on the first, you know, on the team sheet for the first game of next season. Yeah, it wasn't a great afternoon for Kelleher. The second one obviously sort of goes under him, and you think probably should have gone with his feet in that situation. And then the fourth one, it looks like he's just a little bit too far over to his near post and sort of opens the goal up for Adam Armstrong to sort of stick it past him. But it's one of them, isn't it? He's still a young goalkeeper, you know, 24, not a very inexperienced goalkeeper. And I imagine, given the amount of games he's played for Liverpool and done really well, you're going to have these types of games when you're young keeper learning, and this will probably benefit him a lot more than some of the other ones where he's sort of stood in goal and been able to watch for most of the afternoon.
Yeah, I mean, let's face it, what goalkeeper is going to feel secure with Gomez and Matip in front of him, James? Where do they stand, those two? I mean, have we seen the last of Matip?
I think a lot will depend on what kind of offers a forthcoming. You know, Klopp said back end of last week that as things stand, no one had come to him and said that they wanted to move on this summer. And it's all well and good to say, well, you know, you need to upgrade in that department, which I'd agree with. But, you know, you've got players with contracts and you need to get the right deal to let someone move on. You know, Matip's obviously probably, I'd say, the more likely of the two, because he's only got one year left on his contract. There had been some talk about him potentially moving back to Germany, although recently, you know, Liverpool distanced themselves from that. So it'd be interesting to see if that situation changes. Yeah, I mean, both of them struggled, didn't they, coming into the team? I do think, you know, as Andy said, I think you have to put it in the context of it's not easy when you've played so little football, just being thrown into a game, even a game where there's no real pressure riding on it, because, you know, you've got no rhythm. You know, I think Gomez's last appearance was in the 0-0 draw at Chelsea. So, you know, neither of them had hardly had any minutes at all in this kind of new system, which is effectively three at the back in possession. And yeah, they both struggled and, yeah, made life more difficult for Kelleher, who certainly didn't cover himself in glory on the day. Probably the first time, really, when Kelleher's played a senior game for Liverpool and not looked the part. And I thought Tsimikas struggled as well at left back coming in for Robertson. So, yeah, I think it did kind of make you think, yeah, for all the talk of midfield reinforcements, you know, I think you could make a strong case that bolstering that back line is equally as important this summer.
Yeah, Kiva, I think Tsimikas as well, you know, the school of thought that says, oh, you know, you could move Andy Robertson on and have Tsimikas in there. I think that was a bit of a wake-up call for them as well, wasn't it?
I think we sort of discussed on the last pod, didn't we, about Robertson, and, you know, imagine him leaving Liverpool is just, I mean, nonsensical, really, given his performances a lot of the time over the past few seasons have just always been at a level, and he just drives Liverpool as much as possible. And sometimes you need that one player on the pitch to spark that in everyone else. And Andy Robertson's definitely been that. And then obviously his quality as well. I think at times this season, his level hasn't quite been there, and he hasn't always looked as fresh as, you know, you'd maybe like to see him. But he still trudges up and down that left side, doesn't he? Doing his best. So I think, yeah, there's certainly Tsimikas can do a job and, you know, has proven that since he joined Liverpool and definitely made, you know, that headache of a backup left back go away for Klopp. But your first choice left back is...
he's definitely a backup, though, isn't he? He's definitely a backup.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, he's a backup, isn't he? And when he comes in, you know, we're always usually sort of like, oh, Tsimikas had a great game. So when he does come in as backup, he does a good job. But I guess if, you know, Robertson was out for an extended period of time, then that would truly be sort of, you know, Tsimikas getting tested. Because at points, he's actually relieved Robertson of, you know, Robertson's maybe been dipping in his own form and then Tsimikas has come in, allowed Robertson to rest. And then, you know, you've seen Andy Robertson improve and get back to his best. And that's how crucial having backup options are.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And Andy, of course, Firmino bowed out with a goal, you'd expect it. I mean, all right, he's gone now and we should move on and forget about him. But we've got to have one last mention him for that goal.
And he keeps doing it, doesn't he? He keeps just popping up with another goal to give us another opportunity to talk about him. And I quite like the fact that his last Liverpool goal is one where he sits someone on his arse and then puts it past the keeper, which feels very Firmino just because of the technical brilliance and all that type of stuff that we've spoke about a number of times in the last few weeks. But yeah, another little, he obviously got his last Anfield goal and it was nice for him to get his another goal and his last goal on his final appearance and the manner of it was really nice as well.
Was it through the keeper's legs as well, did I see?
Yeah, it was.
Which is, you know, come on, if Firmino's going to get a last goal, he's going to nutmeg the goalkeeper. I love that Fabinho assisted him. Fabinho has like 10 assists for Liverpool now. Like, not a person you'd expect to play that pass, but obviously that Brazilian connection, I feel like it was probably the nicest person to almost assist him, especially because Fabinho's improvement as well sort of capped off maybe, you know, over the past couple of months at least with that assist. And then Trent's pass, what the hell? That was world-class stuff again.
Yeah, I mean, like all through the season, they show glimpses of being brilliant. And yet, oh, also of being a mess.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is Walk On, your Liverpool podcast from The Athletic with James Pearce, Kiefer O'Neill and Andy Jones. Well, we wanted a team from the South Coast to get a draw or even score four goals, didn't we? And they didn't. Now, let's talk about Everton. Actually, I'm quite pleased that they stayed up because it's better for the city. And, of course, I've got lots of Evertonian friends and some family. Not really family. But you've got, you know, and so 70%, no, 80% of me wanted them to stay up and then 20% of me wanted them to go down. One, for the sheer malicious fun you get from it. And two, because of the abuse that I think anyone who's connected with Liverpool gets on social media from them. But, you know, Kiefer, you've got a brother who's an Evertonian. How did you feel about it?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've said this in the past. I'm not like there's no malice in my heart. I'm just a good soul trying to be a good person, and so maybe that's why I tone that. I was just like, I think, you know, when the fixtures are announced, it's the first one I look for, no matter what, and always will be. I don't care about, you know, Man United might be next on that list, but it's Everton first for me, and always will be. I guess. And my brother Keaton's a big blue. And I mean, my family, like a lot on Merseyside, they're just split down the middle. So, you know, there was plenty of Reds in the family yesterday, probably wanting Everton to go down. And then, you know, plenty of Everton fans at the game in my family as well. So, yeah, I just think it's something that, yeah, probably not the best person if you really want that, like, vitriol or whatever, because I'm not going to give that, because I just think, yeah, I think Liverpool would be a little bit lost without Everton. Like, derbies are the best games every season, even sometimes when they're just like nil-nil and just tense. I just think they're the ones that make you feel like no other game in the season can make you feel, because you're going to be like in work the next day, or, you know, in the Aldi, and your neighbour who's an Evertonian's going to be like saying something. You know, it's that kind of stuff, isn't it? It's close quarter stuff. And I just think, yeah, I think I'd kind of, I guess, miss them.
James, the City needs two Premier League clubs, doesn't it?
Yeah. I must admit, like, I slightly mixed emotions. I'm probably not quite as good a person as Kiva. And there was part of me that, you know, because I know plenty of Evertonians who probably the best night they've had in recent years has been when Liverpool have lost Champions League finals and been pipped to league titles. So you can't help but think of some of those people. And as you said, Tony, the abuse on social media. But yeah, in terms of good mates of mine who are, you know, staunch Blues, I was pleased for them. There was a big roar in the away end at St Mary's when news filtered through that Leicester had gone in front, and it looked like Everton's long stay in the top flight might be coming to an end. But yeah, you're right. It is good for the City, and you know I think the thing is with Everton as well, they've got a hell of a task on their hands. You know, things are relative, aren't they? We talk about, you know, Liverpool being in a mess, and you know what a job there is to be done this summer. We're talking about Liverpool need two or three midfielders and a centre half, and we're confident they'll be back competing for the biggest prizes again. I think the issue with Everton is, you know, when you look at the mess they are off the pitch, as much as on it, in terms of that squad, you almost think they're probably going to find themselves in a similar scrap again next time around, because there's just so much work to be done. But yeah, I do hope that they can sort things out and get a degree of, you know, stability, really.
Yeah, well, the first thing I did at the final whistle there is think to myself, oh, you know, Andy, I thought, oh, Luton are bound to go straight back down. Oh, how good is Sheffield United and Burnley, because Everton are going to be fighting for this again. But at least we got a derby. But, you know, you've seen a lot of Burnley, obviously, because you cover them. How big a challenge is it going to be for Everton again next year?
Yeah, I think I'd agree with James. I think that they're probably in a better situation, and you would think they'll be able to strengthen in the market, and I guess a lot
with their financial fair play situation. Ooh.
Well, yeah, but you know you can wheel and deal a little bit, can't you? And I'm sure they'll be trying to find little bits and pieces they can add. And I mean, to be honest, a lot of their future relies heavily on Calvert-Lewin and his fitness. I think without him coming back into the fray for that sort of little run, then I struggled to see how they would have stayed up. But yeah, it was one of them yesterday. I sort of half wanted them to go down because I thought it would be really funny. But then equally, I was like, yeah, I still do want the derbies, even though I hate the build-up and I hate the thought of losing to Everton. You know, you still love the derbies, as Kiva said. And I also, obviously, covering Burnley, spent 3 years talking to Sean Dyche and, you know, getting to know James Tarkowski and Dwight McNeil. So for them, I was happy for them that they're still Premier League players. But yeah, hopefully Burnley will go there and also take 6 points off them next season as well.
Well, Everton are going to have to do a lot of wheeler dealing. But Liverpool are as well, aren't they, James? You know, this summer, I mean, we've talked about it all. Yeah, we know how big the overhaul needs to be. But go on, go through it again, because it's the end of the season.
Yeah, I mean, it is, isn't it? I think there's never a summer at Liverpool, is there, you go into and go, well, it's not an important summer. There's differing levels, isn't there? And I think in the context of the Klopp era, this feels especially big. Especially, I think, on the back of missing out on the Champions League, because I think there is a degree of kind of bated breath. You know, how is that going to impact things? Are we really going to see the kind of the statement of intent and show of ambition that supporters want to see from the owners? You know, are they prepared to really back the manager despite the financial hole left by missing out on Champions League football after 6 seasons of being in that competition? So yeah, there's, you know, I think Klopp touched upon it yesterday. He said, you know, yes, I'll have a break. He said, but you know, it's just work of a different kind starting now. And he said it's going to be a very busy one, because, you know, we just in terms of numbers, we know that, don't we? You know, the fact that he's saying goodbye to Firmino and Milner, Keita, Oxlade-Chamberlain, obviously Arthur Melo going back to Juventus, having never graced the Premier League. He'll always have those 13 minutes off the bench in Naples. And you look at that midfield area and know, I would expect Alexis McAllister to become a Liverpool player this summer, and it's going to be intriguing to see who else follows him through the door, because you know you need three, really. I think if you're serious about getting right back up there, as we said before, you need another athletic, dynamic centre half. And you know what can Liverpool do in terms of the finance available to Klopp? Can they do exactly what he hopes to do? Do they have to cash in on a couple of players on the fringes of the squad? We mentioned a few of those earlier on to generate revenue. They're going to have to be quite clever, and Klopp's going to have to probably be at his charismatic best in terms of selling the dream, because you know no Champions League does have an impact. I think we've probably seen that already with, you know, David Ornstein broke the news late last week that Mason Mount's preference is now Manchester United. You know, I've seen a lot of people say, well, you know, I didn't want him anyway. The kind of immediate reaction you get when you kind of find that a player that your club's after may prefer a move elsewhere. But I think that's just a little bit of a warning that, you know, life outside the Champions League does make things more tricky. And, you know, especially if that club, say Man United in that case, are able to match or even beat what Liverpool were offering in terms of wages. So they're going to need to be shrewd. They're going to need to be decisive as well, because you don't want these things, you know, dragging on. You know, Klopp wants, you know, the ideal situation is that you have everyone together for the start of pre-season on July the 8th.
Yeah, I mean, Andy Hughes has not ordered to the squad back in February. Has anything changed in terms of who you said should stay and should go?
I don't think it was massive changes. I think the biggest one would have been, I think I had Fabinho, which at the time in February looked like a player who was very much.
Yeah, you wanted him taken out and shot, if I remember.
Not quite my words. I don't think that's quite what it is.
Yeah, that's exactly what you wrote. That's a quote. I'm reading it now.
But I think he's probably the big change of someone who is, you know, has looked the part again. He's been much better in this new system, and I think it suits him a lot more, gives him a lot less work to do, and he's been better in it. I don't think there was many other sort of surprises in there other than the ones who have gone. I mean, I would have kept Firmino, but he's obviously not going to stay. It's whether Liverpool need to replace him. But that was also done before Liverpool decided to become, you know, an inverted fullback team. And sort of suddenly you're looking at some of the players and thinking, do they sort of suit exactly what this role is? So Tsimikas is an example where I think he's more of a left wing back than a left centre back, and Liverpool's left back role is now more left centre back than sort of the galloping forward left wing back. And while Robertson, when he's played, they still want that in the side. There is a more of a responsibility and a discipline. You wonder if they do strengthen the defence, that's an area where they think, well, we might need someone who can play left centre back and left back rather than a Tsimikas type. But equally, Tsimikas, you know, very, very new to the system, not played in it much, so he may be able to develop, adapt, and that's what pre-season is going to be about, I think, finding out exactly who fits into this system. We've already seen a fair few, like Jones, for example, the big winner, I guess, from this system change. But the likes of like a Harvey Elliott and stuff, you're looking at how exactly do they fit into this system, and that should then, you know, play into, you know, any other business than the obvious, which is the midfield.
Yeah, Kiva, have you any idea, because I haven't, what to expect from this Jörg Schmadtke if and when he arrives? I mean, his arrival appears to be imminent, but it's a big job to hit the ground running on, isn't it, at this stage?
Yeah, I think his job will be obviously important in the coming weeks, but you'd imagine and you'd hope that Liverpool have got a lot of, you know, those transfers almost lined up on a lot of that, I guess, legwork around it, you know, already done, and things sort of getting closer to being, I guess, finalised for a lot of different things. I know there's a lot of moving parts, so a lot with players, agents and, you know, other clubs and different things. So you'd imagine he's coming in and could just, you know, have a little bit of a tap in here and there, and then, you know, get down to some, I guess, work ahead of like planning for what's next, because that's what Liverpool have always been good at. Well, were for a long time, getting the players targeted and in, you know, not maybe this summer for some of them. It'll be, you know, when the winter window comes around, that was hard to say, comes around again. You know, that kind of thing, that forward planning, that finding those gems, those hidden gems, the, you know, Brighton are finding wherever they are. You know what I mean? Getting the player before they go to Brighton or, you know, another Premier League team or whatever it is. I think that work has to happen and has to happen constantly and quickly and, you know, at the very top level, because you don't stay at the top if you're not the top at all of those things behind the scenes as well.
Yeah, James, I mean, who else you see coming in? I mean, should they just send a minibus down to Brighton and, like, load us up?
I mean, it wouldn't be the worst idea, would it? I mean, I'd be surprised if there was another one from Brighton as well as McAllister. I think as much in an ideal world, you tell McAllister to bring his mate Caicedo with him. I think probably financially, that is a little bit unrealistic. So yeah, it's going to be interesting. You know, we know that, you know, Liverpool have been very interested in Mason Mount, but as I said before, you know, at the minute it looks like his preference is Old Trafford. So they're going to have to react to that. But yeah, a lot of groundwork has been done. I think we know there's been so many meetings going on behind the scenes and you know, sit downs with agents establishing exactly what it would take to get a player to Liverpool and what kind of fees would be involved and personal terms and, you know, and different lists drawn up, because of course until last week Liverpool didn't know whether they were going to be a Champions League club or a Europa League club next season. You know, Gravenberch at Bayern Munich is an interesting one in terms of we know that Liverpool would love him, but Bayern, as things stand, have been very reluctant to even talk about potentially selling him, despite his lack of starts there. So, you know, you kind of think, well, is that a firm stance, or is that just a bit of kidology designed to get the maximum fee for him, especially if he does turn around and tell them he wants to move on? So, yeah, it's going to be a really busy few weeks. I think, you know, Klopp admitted that himself in terms of, you know, he may well be going off on his holidays, but yeah, I don't think he'll be too far away from his phone. And, you know, as Kiva said, with Schmadtke coming in, a lot of the work has already been done. And, you know, of course, the sales pitch, is done to a large extent by Klopp. You know, he is still a massive driver in terms of attracting people to Liverpool, and financial decisions are ultimately made by Mike Gordon, the FSG president. So it's not like, you know, Schmadtke doesn't have just free rein to come in. And, you know, sometimes you can almost overestimate the sporting director role, because I think, you know, Klopp and Mike Gordon will be just as influential. It's down to Schmadtke to do the negotiating and, you know, and probably, you know, as well as driving a hard bargain, just trying to ensure that things don't drag on and you don't get sagas that then potentially open the door for another club to whip away from you a player that you really want.
Roberto Firmino. It's in! It's seven!
This is Walk On from The Athletic with me, Tony Evans, James Pearce, Kiefer O'Neill and Andy Jones. Well, before we head off to the summer break, let's just talk one more time about this dreadful season. At the standout moments, the good, the bad and the ugly. Imagine you're one of that small group of Reds who can say, I saw the Mellow live.
I was there.
James hasn't shut up about it.
I also saw Arthur Mello grace the Papa John's trophy. And I saw him get subbed off for Jay Spearing.
Oh, that is a collector's item.
Yeah, and there was free pizza in the press box that night as well at Rochdale. Yeah,
forget Istanbul. I was there for Arthur Mello. Well, all right. Well, come on. I think there's an obvious one here. Our favourite moments of the season. Kiva.
Liverpool 7, Manchester United 0.
Is anyone going to argue with that?
Do you know what? In terms of just a moment, for me, it would have to be Jota's late winner against Tottenham. as much as, like, in the grand scheme of things, obviously it counted for nothing in terms of the top four, but just the beauty of wiping that smug look off Richarlison's face, especially when you put it in the context of that was his only Premier League goal of the season. His only Premier League goal of the season, and taking his shirt off, shushing the Liverpool fans, and then Liverpool going straight down the other end and Lucas Moura putting one on a plate for Jota. So, in terms of a game, of course, it would have to be that historic demolition of United, because that was glorious. But, yeah, if we're talking just moments, then that the 4-3 against Tottenham with the late twist for me.
Yeah, and Andy, there was other moments. I mean, your mate Turkowski hitting the post and then going up the other end. I mean, it's like, what was it? 1.2 seconds later, Salah scores.
yeah, definitely. To turn that sort of moment that looked like it could be horrific to one of pure ecstasy was excellent. And yeah, you try and think, and there's actually not that many moments, is there? But there has been. I mean, that 20 minutes against Madrid was good. The rest wasn't. But then the Community Shield was, everyone, you know, when you just thought, oh, Liverpool are, you know, still exactly where they were, they're going to go on and, you know, be a force in every competition. And oh, how we laughed when Erling Haaland missed that sitter. But I think that is exactly why he's done what he's done since. Because he decided that day that, nah, he wasn't having this again. He was just going to destroy the Premier League, which is what he's done. But the Community Shield itself, great day. Nunes had that moment, and obviously, unfortunately, he's not had more of them, and hopefully that plenty more are to come in the seasons to come. But in terms of obviously getting one over Man City, that was it was a really good day and a really good game and a really good win.
Yeah, you wonder whether they were playing rope-a-dope with us, though, don't you? I mean, you know, low points, Kiva. I mean, for me, it was, you know, you're 2-0 up against Real Madrid and you think, we're on the march, Istanbul again, here we come, and boot me train. And then it all fell apart.
Yeah, that's the one sore point of the season, isn't it? Because 2-0 up after struggling against Real Madrid in Champions League finals of recent years, and even just in the Champions League in general, felt like, all right, this is the start, this is the Liverpool that we get to see, like, almost reminiscent of the best European night, but also, you know, the one against Man City where Liverpool just, you know, obliterated them, and quite quickly felt like that. And then it just all fell away, and then we were just left picking up the pieces. And obviously Liverpool go away to Madrid and are unable to lay a glove on them, which I think just summed up the whole season and I guess the sort of decline. I do feel like for me, the one game that I was just like, God, this is bad, was Brentford away. I think January 2nd or something, was it? That was just, I think that was a real low point. And there were maybe lower points after it, Brighton, Wolves, you know, games that, where Liverpool just didn't even look like they were on the pitch. But that game summed something up. It just felt like you were looking at Jurgen Klopp and, you know, looking at those players, just thinking, what is going on there? Nobody is recognisable. I think that was the worrying point. Liverpool somehow come out of that, which is, you know, mad, because I just never felt like that could happen when we were just deep in that feeling.
Yeah, James, what was your lowest moments?
I think the one that probably drove me to KFC the most was the 3-0 defeat at Molineux in what was that, early February, I think it was. I couldn't go past Keel Services on the way back after that. I mean, it's difficult to pick a nadir this season, because there has been so many. When you think, you know, we actually lost, the only defeat at home in the league was to relegated Leeds, and you think of some of those pitiful away performances at Brighton and Brentford and Forest and, you know, Bournemouth. To lose 1-0 at Bournemouth 6 days after putting 7 past Manchester United, I mean, sublime to the ridiculous. But I think in terms of an inept team performance, lacking in anything that you've kind of come to expect from a Klopp team over such a long period, it would have to be that 3-0 at Molineux. I mean, it really was shambolic. And I think, you know, that's why there is a little bit of positivity going into the summer, because I've got to admit, you know, coming away from Molineux that day, and it was quite a lively evening after that, because
Jurgen decided he didn't fancy answering what I asked him in the press conference afterwards. You kind of thought, well, have the players almost stopped listening? It was that bad that day. And it wasn't just a one-off. It was a collection of results. And you thought, you know, whatever, you know, Liverpool had had a full week to prepare, I think, for that game, having got knocked out the FA Cup to Brighton. And you were thinking, you know, you've had a full week, like, and they started like they just weren't ready for it. They weren't prepared. There was, what was the plan? And you kind of, you're thinking, you know, I really hope things aren't going to, like, at that point you thought, will everything just completely unravel? You know, and then, you know, it wasn't that long after that, was it? I remember Klopp kind of half joking in a press conference at Kirby, you know, I guess you're thinking the elephant in the room is why I'm still sat here when so many other clubs were pulling the trigger and sacking managers. But of course, that was never a serious debate because of the amount of credit Klopp has got in the bank. You know, quite rightly, in my opinion, he's had the unwavering backing of everyone. But yeah, there was some proper bleak times there along the way, and yes, some mitigating circumstances with the punishing injury setbacks, but also some, you know, really, really alarming team performances that made you fear for the future. But, you know, 25 points out the last 33 has at least kind of provided a little bit of momentum going into the summer.
Yeah, I mean, and have you started therapy for your KFC addiction?
I just bought some bigger jeans.
Andy, what was your low point?
I'd agree with what the others have said. I think there was sort of two for me, one a game and one not an injury. I think Luis Diaz's re-injury during the World Cup break was like a really low point because there'd been a lot of, oh, we're going to get Luis Diaz back and we're going to have Jota back and suddenly we're going to look like Liverpool again. And then, you know, within a day or 2 days of him training, there was that then you showed that picture of him in a hospital bed and he'd had surgery and you just thought, you know, the season's already been tough enough. Why did you make it even tougher? And then in terms of the game, it was a 3-0 at Brighton for me, sandwiched in between the Brentford and the Wolves. And it was because it was the first game in a very, very long time. And I'm a bit of a pessimist, so I always think every game Liverpool play is going to be hard and it might be tough. And, you know, the opposition can do this, and this. And, you know, they might cause Liverpool problems. But it was the first time where you sort of just felt Liverpool were going to lose before it had kicked off. Like, it was like, they've got no chance here. Brighton are just going to beat them. And it was that was obviously a low point because it's a very, very rare feeling you get in football, and it's one that Liverpool under Jurgen Klopp especially, you've just never had because they've been so good, they've been so consistent, they've just been better than everyone else, and on a par with Man City. But that was the first game in a God knows how long where I just knew what the result was going to be.
I think we need to talk about Brighton. Took 4 points off us in the league, knocked us out the cup, and then rolled over for Everton. You know what? When we shake hands on the McAllister deal, I tell you what, we want to count our fingers there because they're probably selling us a ringer, probably selling us Billy McAllister or someone, you know. It's I don't know, Brighton. They just did us over like a kipper every way this season. Anyway, the maddest moment, well, for me, obviously, it was Nunes arriving at Anfield and getting himself sent off like a plank. You know, I think that was a sign of things to come, wasn't it? You know, Andy.
I think the maddest has just been Nunes in general. Mm. Whenever you watch him play, he was just wild, chaotic. All the good things, but also at times some of the bad things. And yeah, I'd agree because Liverpool generally are sort of towards the top of the Fair Play League and all that type of stuff, isn't it? And, you know, they can be a little bit, you know, naughty every now and again, but certainly not to the level of just turning a hard head butting someone. So yeah, it was bizarre more than mad, wasn't it? Because you couldn't quite believe it had happened. And then also then you read that, you know, he's had this all, you know, Nuno, you think, oh, maybe, you know, someone's just wound him up, but he doesn't deal well with all that type of stuff. And then you sort of read that, no, actually, he's dealt with this for years and he's been sound. But for some reason, he decided on his home debut for Liverpool that he was just going to, do that. And obviously that sort of, yeah, helped set the tone of what became, what this season has become. But yeah, in terms of the mad moments, there's not really been...
Well, There's Alisson against Real Madrid, isn't it? You know, you think Alisson, Real Madrid. You see Courtois make a mistake at one end. And then you think, oh, you know, that's surreal. Good goalkeepers don't do things like that. And Alisson's like, hey, Courtois, hold me beer.
It's one against Wolves as well. He just passed to the fella. He was just like standing next to him, just passed the Wolves fella in the box.
I believe that's known as...
That was mad.
He's had so much more to do this season. He's just, at some point, he must just be like, ugh, what's going on here?
But he's used to people having shots at him now that he's just thought, well, we'll just cut out the middleman and I'll just pass it to you.
Do you know what I love about goalkeepers, though? Like, even the best in the world, Alisson Becker, whoever else, can have just a completely mad moment. It gives me confidence in life, to be honest, because you know they're absolutely brilliant and then they do something really silly and stupid and I'm like, do you know what? I shouldn't be as hard on myself. Like, we can all do silly stuff at times.
I think on those wise words, we should sign off for the summer. So that's all from Walk On, your Liverpool podcast brought to you by The Athletic. Thanks to James, Kiva and Andy, and you for listening. Well, enjoy your summer. We'll be taking a break before being back with you in August, hopefully with a fully functioning Liverpool midfield. In the meantime, keep an ear out for the odd interview and specials that could be popping up on the feed. We'll catch you before the new season as Jürgen gets the red machine firing again.
The Athletic.